Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for January 2nd, 2009. Happy New Year, everyone! This week, how we may soon be recharging our mobile phones with energy from our own bodies, and why hands-free mobile phones aren't as safe as many people think. And we'll also answer a listener's question about global warming. But first, Suzanne found out what deadly diseases had to do with global cooling in the past.
Humans have been warming the planet for thousands of years. That's because agriculture releases greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. But between the 16th and 18th centuries, the planet actually grew colder during a period called the Little Ice Age. Northern Europe experienced extremely cold winters, and glaciers there expanded as opposed to receding as they are today. Scientists attribute this chilly anomaly to a decrease in sunspots and an increase in volcanic activity during this time period. But Stanford geochemists Richard Neville and Dennis Bird have uncovered evidence that mass death was also responsible. At the time of European contact, Neville says about 60 million indigenous people were living in the Americas. But deadly new diseases like smallpox and measles decimated the population. The indigenous people had little immunity to these European imports.
And within about a century to about 150 years after European arrival, that number had diminished by approximately 90%.
In the most heavily populated areas of Mexico, Central and South America, native peoples had been cultivating maize or corn for thousands of years.
Maize is a light demanding plant. And in order to grow it successfully, you have to clear forest.
But when large amounts of people died from disease, Neville says huge rainforests that had been cleared for agriculture grew back. And the trees started pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Reforestation sucks carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere as trees acquire biomass and begin to effectively store carbon in soils. So it basically acts as a huge carbon vacuum when you have a massive reforestation event.
He says this was enough to significantly cool parts of the planet.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, global cooling isn't our biggest worry right now, but it's sure been cold outside, at least in the Midwest and the Northeast. That prompted listener George Morris of Rockville, Maryland, to write in with a timely question. If climate change is warming the planet, he asks, then why is it so darn cold in some parts of the country this winter? Well, George, Dr. Neville was kind enough to answer this question for us, too.
Global temperature reconstructions are based on global average surface temperatures. And so you're looking at temperature over the entire planet, both in oceans and in land masses. And so it's a globally average temperature. And you might certainly get a regional variation. So you might actually have a colder winter in parts of the American Midwest or in the Northeast. But when you regionally average the temperatures, you still get a global temperature increase. When we talk about global warming, we're talking about a global average as opposed to regional variations. And it's also the same difference between climate and weather. Weather is fine-scale variation in temperature and so forth. Climate is average weather. So that when you look at the fact that there's huge piles of snow outside, you have to remember that you're only a piece of the globe. So it's harder for people when they're freezing or when they've lost power to keep that perspective. It's just human nature.
University of California at Irvine atmospheric chemist and Nobel laureate Sherwood Rowland also had something to say about the phenomenon.
Most people, when something is very special, they remember it. And it's the 20-inch snowstorm or 9 or 10 inches of rain that you remember and not the fact that those are way away from the average.
Next, we'll switch gears. Our New York correspondent, Justin Warner's, going to tell us why talking on hands-free devices in the car doesn't give you a free ride.
Several states and municipalities have banned drivers from using handheld cell phones. Statewide bans are in place in California, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Washington State, and the District of Columbia. Yet all of these states allow most drivers to use hands-free cell phones or Bluetooth devices. That's scientifically questionable, since several studies have found that hands-free cell phones affect drivers just as much as handheld models. A recent experiment by psychologists Todd Horowitz of Harvard Medical School and Melina Kunar of the University of Warwick in England may explain why. Volunteers in the study participated in a test of visual attention, which involved tracking moving objects on a computer screen. Sustaining a conversation over a hands-free phone significantly impaired their performance. But passively listening to a novel over the phone, or simply repeating the caller's words out loud, had no effect. Horowitz says this narrows down what makes cell phones so distracting, even when you're not using your hands.
It's not listening, it's not moving your mouth and making sounds and making words. It's that intervening bit where you have to actually think about what you're going to say and, you know, generate some new content for whoever you're talking to.
In fact, volunteers who solved brain teasers over the phone performed even worse than those having casual conversations, presumably because they had to think harder about their responses. So does that mean that speaking to passengers who are actually in the car with you can affect your driving skills? In theory, yes. But Horowitz notes that there's a crucial difference between a passenger and a cell phone caller. A passenger can see what's happening on the road and clam up when necessary.
I remember at a conference one year, we were going back to the airport and we were discussing this very issue, you know, conversation with people who are there versus cell phone conversation. And we approached the on-ramp to the expressway and everybody got quiet. And then the conversation started up again once we'd merged onto the expressway.
Had there been someone on a cell phone at that time, he or she might have kept chatting away, demanding attention when the driver needed it most. That's why Horowitz says that most of today's cell phone laws might benefit the hands-free phone industry more than the people they're designed to protect.
Thanks, Justin. Speaking of cell phones, imagine recharging your cell phone by talking into it, or your iPod by dancing. According to researchers at Texas A&M, these advances are near at hand thanks to piezoelectric materials that generate electricity when they vibrate or bend. They've been used for over a century, but now scientists are finding out that they get more efficient as they get smaller. A new generation of tiny juice generators could soon help charge a variety of portable devices. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we've got some interesting health stories for you, from clothes that could save your life to colonoscopies that could be giving you only half the picture. Until then, check out our Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got an intriguing new science story every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.